Bible class, I wish to express my sincere thanks unto you in the token of appreciation that you sent to my home. I must say, you are very good to such an unworthy creature as I am. I am deeply humbled under a feeling sense of how much that you people show your appreciation to me. I must say that the Lord has been good unto me and also unto you, and that throughout the year that has gone by, we have not missed one Lord's Day. He has given us health and strength and given us the ability to come up and teach his precious word, which we feel so insufficient to do. We humbly pray that you would remember us, your unworthy servant, for we need your prayers at the throne of grace, especially us as teachers. The Lord is good to us. He has increased us in number as a Bible class, and we thank you for your prayerful attention and for your attendance. But at many times we are very sorrowful also, for there is such a lack of the power of the Spirit of God accompanying the truth that we bring unto you. We must also say that when we teach you, we do not teach you with enticing words of man's wisdom, and we do not try to be eloquent, for we have none of that. I can assure you of that, and you might just as well say that is true. But we do try to teach you the plain historical and experimental truth as God gives us to see it in the lessons that we teach. And we hope and pray that God may not witness against me and against you for all what we have taught and what we have heard. May you pray that the word of God may be richly blessed amongst us, and that his power may yet accompany the truths for the welfare of your immortal souls. Today our lesson is founded upon the 32nd chapter of the book of Exodus. The last time we were following the children of Israel, if you remember, we were speaking to you about the golden calf. And we said to you there was one point that we would like to dwell upon, and that was this, that these people, they came very early in the morning, they brought sacrifices and offerings, and they sat down to eat, and they rose up to play. We said as we stopped that this was mostly the religion that we have round about us in the world this very day. So many people, they get up early in the morning and they bring their offerings, they bring their sacrifices to the house of God. And after they have done this, my hearers, they spend the rest of the day just as Israel did. They rose up, they ate, and they played. So today we find most people who attend a place of worship, they come once a day. The rest of the day we find them what doing, just like Israel. They're making preparations to eat. They make preparations to have dinner with each other. They make also preparations to go away and to play. They go to the seashore. They go visiting one another. They spend a day for their own benefit and for their own pleasure. This is a type of what Israel done here around about the golden calf. They worshiped this golden calf and they danced around it. The commentary said that the Egyptians, they likewise had a similar occasion when they danced around their god, their cow, or their calf, as we would call it. It's called in scripture an ox. And these people sometimes, the Egyptians, they gathered in great numbers around this idol, sometimes to the number of 700,000 of them. And then they would go through all kinds of ceremonies, these Egyptians. And they likewise would rise up and they would drink and they would play. They would drink more wine at this occasion than they drank all year through. And they, when they did these things, many things happened which were indecent. This we see with the Israelites, that they likewise were told by Aaron to take off their clothes, and they were naked. They were dancing in an indecent posture, where also there were many Egyptians with them. And these Egyptians, they were enemies of the Israelites, and they naturally would mock them. And many things took place at such times that were contrary to God and to his law. And now, my hearers, we find Moses up on the mount with God. And now God, he sees what's going on down below. Moses doesn't know this, of course. But God speaks unto Moses and says unto him, "Thy people, which thou hast brought up out of the land of Egypt, they have corrupted themselves. They have turned aside very quickly. They have made them a molten calf, and they have danced around it and worshipped it." This was made known then unto Moses. And now God pleads with Moses that he would get to one side, and that he would let his wrath come down upon these people, for his wrath was very hot. They were a stiff-necked people, and they would not obey God and obey his law. And therefore God wanted to burn down upon them with his wrath, with his indignation. We take notice in this, my hearers, that God sees everything. God sees you and I. He knows what we are doing every day and every night. He's round about us, although you may not realize it and may not have that feeling of his sensible presence. Still, my hearers, it is so. Oh, if we lived under this impression that God saw us, how it would keep us from much evil and from much sin. God seen what was going on with these people, and his wrath rose up, and he wanted to come down with the wrath upon the people. We see in this that sin stirs up the wrath of God. And my hearers, isn't it a wonder that God don't let his wrath come down upon you and I? Are we not all sinners? Did not Adam turn away very quickly after he was created from God? And have we not all turned away from God? What do you and I do? And how justly it would be if God's wrath came down upon us. Oh, he is a long-suffering God. He is a merciful God over us, my hearers. And now these people, they were called stiff-necked. They would not obey God. Are you and I any different, my hearers? Nor we have in Israel a picture of each and every one of us. Israel had been at the mount. Israel had heard the voice of God speaking. A glorious majesty had come down on the mount. And they had said that they would obey God. They had entered into a solemn covenant with God, and here they so quickly turned aside. They so quickly fell into sin after promising that they would obey God. Haven't you and I done the same thing, my hearers? Oh, I am ashamed of myself, my hearers, and I hope there are some of you that are ashamed of yourself. All we have likewise experienced something of the majesty and of the glory of God in our souls, and how quickly we have turned aside, how quickly after promising God that we would obey him, that we would walk in his ways, that we would love him and fear him, that we likewise, like Israel, have sinned against him. All we are a stiff-necked and a perverse generation. Believe me, my hearers, whether you do or not, it's true. This is our attitude towards God, towards his law, towards his word, towards his mercies, towards his love, towards his gospel, which he yet sends unto us. And now we have Moses up on the mount with God, and he is a great help to these people, my hearers. He begins to plead with God. Oh, God had said, "Thy people." He called them Moses' people, as if he said, "I won't have anything more to do with these people. They're so stiff-necked, they're so rebellious. I don't even want to be associated with them anymore." thy people, he says to Moses. But Moses turns and begins to plead with God. And oh, he's an intercessor for Israel. He pleads that God would remember his people. Oh, that he would not pour out his wrath upon them. Oh, that he would, for Abraham, for Isaac, and for Israel's sake, remember what he had spoken unto them. What would the Egyptians say if he poured out his wrath upon them, if he consumed them? They would say that God done that on purpose, that he led them out into the wilderness just to destroy them. What would become of God's great and holy name, of his promises that he had given unto Israel? And Moses got fast hold of the word of God and pleaded with God that he would turn from the fierceness of his wrath and that he would repent of the evil that he intended to bring upon them. My hearers, the wonder of this is that the Israelites knew nothing about what was going on up on this mountain. They knew nothing about what Moses was doing, how he was interceding and pleading for these people because they had sinned so greatly. And so it is, my hearers, with the Church of Christ. We have a glorious intercessor at the right hand of God, an advocate by the Father, who likewise pleads and intercedes for sinners such as you and I, and unknown to us. Oh, we know not how many times the wrath of God might have come down upon us had it not been for this glorious intercessor at the right hand of the Father. And now we find that God, he repented of the evil that he intended to bring upon these Israelites. All we have here, my hearers, likewise, an example of prayer. All this prayer of Moses was heard, was answered. All he pleaded with God, and that upon his promises, upon his word. Oh, if you have a promise of God in your life, if he has visited you and spoken unto you and given you something to hope upon, to pray for, then what a mercy it is if in this life you are given at times faith to plead these promises. You have such a hold on God, my hearers, that God cannot deny his word. He cannot go back on what he says. Oh, if he has spoken to you, he most certainly will fulfill it. He couldn't go back on his promises that he had given unto Abraham, to Isaac, and to Israel. And therefore, Moses pleaded and gained a victory for Israel. Unknown to Israel down below, who were dancing around this golden calf. And now we find that Moses turns away from God on the mount and comes down towards the camp, and Joshua is with him. Joshua, it appears, was up on this mount 40 days and 40 nights waiting for Moses. He was not in the immediate presence with God, but he was a patient person. And he came down with Moses. And Moses had the two tables of testimony in his hand, and the tables were written on both sides. They had the Ten Commandments on them, and the writing was the writing of God. Wonderful stones, my hearers. We value stones, diamonds, pearls, rubies, but all these stones were more valuable than any stone that ever had been brought forth out of the earth. They were the stones that God had written upon personally, individually. And now when Moses came down towards the camp and he seen what was taking place, he seen these people dancing around this golden calf and worshiping it. Oh, Moses' anger waxed hot. He was the meekest man in the world. And oh, Moses, when he seen this, just coming down from the immediate presence of God, all his soul filled with a holy zeal and a holy love for God, to see something like this going on, oh, he became so angry. He took the two tables of stone, and he broke them at the foot of the mount. Some think that he did a great sin when he did this. We read not that God said he had sinned or done anything wrong when he did this. Israel had broken the covenant. Israel had promised that they would keep the commandments. Here they were breaking this commandment, thou shalt not worship an idol, and thou shalt not make a graven image. And they had done that, and they had broken the commandments. And Moses, he broke these tables of stone, and we find likewise that he immediately went into action. He didn't just stand there and look at what was going on, my hearers, no. But he was filled with zeal for God and for his honor. And he went and he took this calf and he threw it in the fire. And after it had been burnt, he took the powder and he strewed it upon the water and he made Israel drink of it. Oh, Moses is a type, my hearers, of a child of God that has been on the mount with God. Have you ever been there? Has God ever encircled you with the arms of his love? Have you ever had communion and fellowship with God? Have you ever experienced something of his nearness, something of his sweetness? And all my hearers, when you are in this state and in this condition, oh, that you'll do the same thing as Moses did. Every idol that you have in your home, that you would want to tear it apart and throw it away. If you have a television, if you have a radio, if you have a hi-fi or whatever you have in your home that you idolize and that you've been worshiping, my hearers, if this takes place, out it must go. And if your members of your family likewise worship such things, oh, you would do the same thing. Here, you wouldn't care what they would say or what they would do. We find this in Moses. He didn't care what the people thought. He was for God. He was for his honor. And therefore, he took this idol and done that with it. Oh, this is what should be done with all the idols, my hearers. And you and I likewise are guilty in this respect. How many idols do we have? How many things do we worship? Oh, what do we spend our time and our money for and our strength for? Oh, my hearers, we find then that Moses, he turns around and says to Aaron, how come that you made these people sin such a great sin? Oh, he rebuked Aaron very sharply because Aaron had let this thing come to pass. Aaron, he spake unto them and he said unto Moses, well, you know the people, you know they're bent on mischief. True enough, they were bent on mischief. But that didn't excuse Aaron for letting this thing come to pass. And my hearers, we are all bent on mischief by nature. We're not a bit better than the Israelites in that respect, no. We all are foolish and vain, and likewise were the Israelites. And now we find that Moses, he stood in the gate of the camp. He's seen everything that had taken place. And you may be sure that these people that had given their gold and their earrings for this idol, that they surely were angry with Moses for what he did. I am sure that if you should stand up in your home and you should do as I've just been describing, you will find many in your family that would be angry with you. They would hate you. They would detest you. They wouldn't like you. And there were such amongst the Israelites and the Egyptians likewise. Oh, they hated Moses because he'd done this. And now my hearers, and Moses, he stood in the gate of the camp. Moses was for God. Oh, what a blessing that we are for God in this life. And Moses stood in the camp, in the gate of the camp, and he says, who is on the Lord's side? Oh, it was just like if all the Israelites and all the people were all for this idol and that Moses stood there alone. It was just like in the day of Elijah. He thought he was the only one that was left to, but there were still 3,000 that hadn't bowed their knee before Baal. And here Moses stood and said, who is on the Lord's side? And we find that the tribe of Levi, They came forth and they gathered round about Moses. This tribe had sprung forth from one of the sons of Jacob, Levi. He, the father of this tribe, and Simeon, they had done something awful. They had killed so many Shechemites because one of the Shechemites had likewise done something to Dinah, their sister, and they had murdered so many of them. And Jacob, when he was dying, he spoke a curse out upon them that they would have no inheritance, no land in the land of Israel, in the land of Canaan. But now God, because of these Levites, were against this, what the Israelites were doing and the Egyptians were doing, he likewise pronounced a blessing upon them by the mouth of Moses, which you may read in Deuteronomy. And these Levites came forth then and stood on the side of Moses. They stood on the side of God. Oh, I was thinking about this question, my hearers. I would put that question to you. In the midst of this world in which we live, amidst so much idolatry and so much worship that is vain, that is sinful, or who is on the Lord's side? Putting this question to you, my hearers, I think there would be very few that would come forward and say, we are on the Lord's side. You know, there's only two sides, my hearers. You are either on the devil's side or you are on the Lord's side. There's no neutrality. You can't be neutral in this. On the devil's side are all wicked creatures who love sin and go on in sin. But on the Lord's side are those who love godliness and holiness. And now which side are you on, my hearers? Oh, it should be an earnest question with each and every one of us. Whose side am I on? Oh, are you still on the devil's side? Oh, what an awful thing to be on his side. And this is the side we all are on by nature. This is the side we have chosen in Adam. Oh, what a blessing if in this life we come to a halt and we make that choice like Moses did. Rather suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. Yea, make the choice of Ruth. What a mercy that has taken place in your life. Oh, whose side are you on? These Levites, they came forward. They were on the Lord's side. They revealed it. And now Moses, he speaks unto these Levites. And he tells them to gird a sword on their side and to go through the company of the Israelites and to slay every man his brother, every man his neighbor, every one that had participated in worshiping and in making this idol, they should be slain. This was the word of the Lord. And these Levites, they went forth with their swords and they did as the word of Moses was to them. They slew every man his brother, every man his neighbor. 3,000 of them fell because they had worshipped this golden calf. They were well known by these Levites who the heads were and the leaders were of this particular sin that they had committed. There probably were many more. You would say and I would say, oh, why wasn't Aaron slain? Why did Aaron escape this terrible punishment? Oh, it was God that was merciful to Aaron. The commentary says, Aaron's sin was not like the sins of the people. Aaron's sin was in weakness, was in infirmity. But the sins of the people were presumptuous. They were proud. This was the difference between Aaron's sin and the sins of the people. And now my hearers, all these people, they were slain by the Levites. Oh, this teaches us another lesson, my hearers. It teaches us that if we are on the side of God, that if we are on the side of Christ, Then we shall leave our father, our mother, our wife, our children, for the sake of Jesus Christ. For if we love them more than we do Christ, we are not worthy to be his servants. This is the word of Jesus Christ himself. All my hearers, it shows likewise that those that are ministers, those that stand up and teach the truth, they likewise must be sincere, they must be honest, they must be sober, they must be bold, they must be courageous to testify against sin, against the world, and against everything that is opposed to the gospel of Christ. These Levites then, they were like soldiers at this time, slaying those that had sinned so greatly. Sometimes God calls upon his people to be witnesses. Many of them have sacrificed their lives and given themselves over unto death for the name and for the sake of Jesus Christ rather than sin against him. My hearers, are you such a witness? And do you witness with your lives against sin, against the world, or against the devil? Oh, how sad it is in these days that we find so very few witnessing against these things. How many are neutral? How many go along with everything just to be peaceful with everybody and not to have any enemies? Oh, to stand on the Lord's side means so much, my hearers. And now we find Moses speaking unto these people, the Israelites. Oh, after this had taken place, you may be sure that many of them were filled with fear and anxiety, that they likewise would be slain. And now Moses says unto them, all ye have sinned a great sin. He did not hide it from them. He told them point blank what they had done. They had sinned a great sin in making this golden idol. And my hearers, it is a great sin to make gold our God and to bow down before it. How many make money, how many make gold their God and offer up everything to have it? And now we find that Moses said unto them that he would go back up unto God, and that peradventure he would make an atonement for their sin. Oh, he wasn't so sure. It was a peradventure. He would then attempt to make an atonement for this great sin that they had done. My hearers, this what Moses says is so applicable to you and I. Oh, it gives us yet a little comfort in prayer, because it's mostly a peradventure whether God will hear us, whether God will answer us, whether God will give us what we ask. It's a peradventure, my hearers. We don't have a direct promise, and therefore it is a peradventure when we bring other people before the throne of grace that they may obtain mercy, that they may be saved. It's a peradventure on our side. Oh, how different it was with our dear Lord Jesus Christ. It was no peradventure with him. No, he went up into heaven above and is at the right hand of the Father. He had performed everything that the Father had given him to do, and he could plead before the throne upon his merits, upon his blood, and upon his righteousness, and it's an all-prevailing plea. It was only a peradventure with Moses. And now Moses, he went up unto God on the mount again, and he spake unto God and said, if thou wilt forgive. Oh, it was if thou wilt forgive. There is forgiveness by thee. This sin that they have committed, thou canst forgive. But now, if thou wilt not, he says, blot me out of thy book. All this what Moses says here, my hearers, is something that is pretty difficult to explain. To think that this man, Moses, he came to God and he said that if God would not forgive them, if this punishment that these people had had and had been inflicted on so many was not sufficient and God was going to destroy them all, well, then he should destroy Moses too. Oh, Moses says, don't let me see it. Do let me die with them then. But if by me giving myself in this way, it will make an atonement for them, oh, then, Lord, blot me out of thy book. This is hard, my hearers, to believe that a person could address God in this way. You know, God teaches us in his word that we are to love our neighbor as ourselves, not above ourselves. And this is loving our neighbors above ourselves. Likewise, Christ himself, he gave himself as an offering and as an atonement for the sins of his people. And he suffered tremendously, outwardly and inwardly. But he did not offer himself to be eternally miserable, eternally banished from God. Because this is what this holds in, my hearers, what Moses prayed to God for. It means that God would be Moses' enemy, that he would be eternally miserable, and that he would be filled with hatred and enmity against God forever and ever in hell, if only these people would be spared. We can't apply this, my hearers. That Moses' heart was filled with zeal and filled with love for the honor of God is true. But it's inconsistent to pray in this way. Some people also apply the saying of Paul in Romans 9, verse 1, where he says himself that he could wish himself to be accursed from Christ for his brethren's sake, who were Israelites. And now to be accursed from Christ, that means to be damned, to be sent to hell, to be an enemy of God forever and ever, to be miserable eternally, just for the sake of his brethren. It's hard to construct this, my hearers. With the honor and with the glory of God, it's hard to understand that a man who is filled with love for God and for his neighbor would offer up a prayer like this. Whatever Moses meant by what he said, God did not accept it. God said he would not blot out Moses out of his book, but only those that sinned against him, that were disobedient unto him. God then, he spake unto Moses and said, go down and take these people and lead them unto the place which I said I would give unto you, and my angel shall go before thee. My hearers, God then still had thoughts of mercy for these people. He still remembered that he had promised to give them the land of Canaan. But now he tells Moses that he should go down to these people and lead them, and that he would send an angel before them. Moses then had gained a point with God. He had gained an atonement for these people. Although God did not say that he would go with them, he still would send an angel before them, a created angel. But he himself would not go. He said that he would visit them for their sins when I visit, he says. And then we read, and the Lord plagued the people because they had made the idol, the golden calf, which Aaron had made. God plagued them then. The commentary said they were visited with an infectious disease. God punished these people for this great sin that they had committed in making this golden calf. Oh, my hearers, when we consider how God is so just and so righteous in punishing sin, when we consider that 3,000 of these people were killed by their own countrymen, by their own brethren, in the morning they had been dancing, They had been singing, and in the evening they were weltering in their own blood. My hearers, the judgments of God are something awful upon sinners. We see this so often, and I've seen it in my young life, how that God visits for sin. Oh, sometimes multitudes of people are gathered together in a playhouse or at other places, and sometimes, especially on the Lord's Day, and God's wrath has come down upon them and consumed them in a moment. And they have been playing, they have been singing and dancing, and in the evening they are already in eternity. This is what happened with the Israelites so many times in the wilderness. And now this is written for our admonition, not for our example, that we should do like them. Oh, let us then be warned to flee from idolatry. Oh, pray God, who has said, "From all thy idols I will cleanse thee, and I will give thee a new heart, and put my laws therein, and cause you to walk in them." May God grant you this blessing at the end of this year, my hearers, that in the new year you may be given to walk in the ways of God, that you may come to a decision, as I said unto you, who is on the Lord's side. May you be brought by his precious grace to say, I am on the Lord's side. May you be given that grace to walk in his ways, to love him, to fear him. And I am sure that you will find his blessing following you day after day. My time is gone, my hearers. This concludes our lesson for today. Next year, the Lord willing, we will continue our subjects of following the Israelites in their travels through the wilderness.